FiPod, ein philosophischer Podcast.
Hello, I'm Natalia. I'm a visual researcher from the Humboldt University, and I'm also a motion designer. And today I'm going to talk about how new technology can bring attention and awareness to the unseen that we are tightly interwoven with. And together with Felix Gein, I really want to understand the eclectic range of successes, failures, and just crazy experiments that animation has gone through over the last few years while exploring the capabilities and limitations of emerging AI technology. And Felix is the visual artist who is using AI in the moving picture for his music video. And he's also director and VFX master from Scotland. Felix's art practices are digital dreamy videos with a great mix of analog and 3D generated footage. Growing up in the highlands, Felix is interested in the natural ecology, geology, and the way human and nature interaction is changing in technosystem times. The augmentation of his own creativity by AI helps him process complicated, unsolvable, wicked problems and produces some stunningly beautiful art along the way. We will talk about his practices, explore the genesis of AI body of work, his early steps and, of course, missteps in this medium, how he has started integrating it into his artistic practice, and, of course, about the concern that so many artists have now, like, to be replaced or laid off. Our conversation will be pretty wide-ranging, but we try to focus on how this emerging AI technologies might enable new creative horizons for artists in the coming decades. Yes. Hello, Felix.
Hello, Natalia. Thank you for having me on your show today. I'm very excited to talk about my practice.
So exploring the realm of your visual language, Felix, you've been using AI as one of your tools in one of the generated artworks. And last year you made this phantasmagoric music video for the LA-based electronic pop music artist Magdalena Bay. It is called Dream Catching, and it got like over 500,000 views on YouTube, and your work became most liked video of this kind in AI aesthetic. And one of the comments is like, this music video is so insane. I love how you used AI to make something so intricate. It fits so well, this song. I love your music, and I usually listen to rock, but this is cutting edge. The production is unbelievably good. So Felix, can you explain how could you convert this rock lover into pop music with your visual only?
Well, yeah, I think he's definitely also talking about the music as well. And Magdalena Bay are very skilled producers. But when they came to me with the proposition to work on a video, I was very excited because they were very open to experimentation and to new technologies. And at this point in time, I was also just dabbling my toes in the possibility of using AI. And I'd seen a lot of videos already in this realm. And I really wanted to see what I could come up with.
So what is the time you're talking about?
This was back in the end of 2021.
And when did you start feeling that you can use this machine learning tool for your art practices? And what is actually in general your take on the new technologies?
Well, I think that the technology is advancing extremely rapidly, and my opinion on it seems to be changing month to month with every new development that occurs. At the time of the production of the video, I was very interested in the potential of what it could bring for someone like myself who is very strongly involved with visual production. And a lot of my work, as you said, is music video related. And as a music video director or producer, you're tasked with making something that is reactive and responsive to a pre-existing song. It's very rare that you would be asked to have a song made after the video has been made. Like, that's not really how it works in the business. So you're always thinking about visual storytelling, and you're always thinking about ways of how to express the sound in a visual way. And when I've been watching my Instagram feed, for example, and seeing AI artists posting their work, I was just fascinated. It was at a time when people were just beginning to use it was called Disco Diffusion, and before that there was one called it was a GAN. I can't remember the name of the GAN now, but it was
okay. Well, GAN, like let's maybe explain what is GAN.
Yes, that's a really good point. So the major shift that happened recently in the world of AI generated art was away from GANs and towards diffusion models. And GANs were originally they were a tool which is consisting of two different neural networks in an adversarial construction to each other. So it's a generative adversarial network. Maybe you want to describe a little bit about your interpretation of how a GAN is constructed and how it operates.
So GAN is machine learning programs that, as Felix already mentioned, uses two neural networks. And it is basically an algorithm that tries to imitate or schematize how the human brain works. That was a time, before 2017, then the GAN was widely used, right?
Yeah, the introduction of diffusion models came, I think it was around the same time that DALL-E was released. It was sort of in the background as another methodology for creating imagery. But before we had a very strong and fast diffusion models, we had generative adversarial networks, which would produce images. And at that time, people were just getting started with how to manipulate these generative adversarial networks to produce animations, which is the thing that I'm most interested in, being a animation-based artist, video-based artist. I don't tend to work with stills, and I don't really use stills in my practice, and I don't often produce stills. So for me, it was always about making moving images, and I think AI art had always been something that was very temporally unstable, I would say, like something that would flicker and change rapidly and
but
very hard to...
But this is where the movement is coming from in AI, right? It's like flickering, basically. It's like this noise flickering.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ways of creating an image, an image, and then another image, and then another image. And like, it's all about how you, what tools you want to try and use to produce a moving picture. But yeah, you're right in the sense that AI art generally begins from noise and then resolves into, or the fusion models begin from noise and then resolve into like more strong static images. But so when you try and make many pictures from noise, you end up with a very noisy flickering result. But the technique that I was using in my music video that we were just discussing was a image to image process where you could essentially input one image and along with a prompt and some other settings to do with like the amount of reconstruction you wanted, you could reimagine that input image as an output image. Like you would basically inject or embed or infer more information into the image with a prompt.
So is it basically like style transfer, what you did? You just like took your own image that you created. It's not like a database, it's like your own image. And then you just totally change the style, like using this AI like a tool, right?
Yeah, it was definitely used like a tool in that sense. It wasn't used it wasn't generating a completely novel or new image from a prompt. It was more modifying or reimagining an existing image using a prompt. So it's a form of style transfer, yeah.
When I say novel, what do you mean under novel image?
Novel as in new, as in something completely unseen before.
Okay.
Like I think that this approach enabled me to be much more directional and much more involved in the animation process, because essentially the animation was still being done by myself as a 3D artist. I was using Cinema 4D, which is a common tool used for creating 3D animations, and I was building worlds using very basic constructions. Like I was making like a very basic mountain and then a train and a very basic train track and, you know, trees. And these were just like very low poly assets that didn't have a lot of detail to them. But as soon as the camera was moving through these worlds, there was something dynamic happening, which was interesting. And then all I needed to do was input this pre-made animation into the GAN, and it would along with a prompt and some settings that were controlled by another artist I was working with called Max Kreis. He was actually processing the images for me on his own set of GPUs he had. So he would, I would send him my input images, he would process them through the GAN, and then we would reconstruct them again at the other end and do a bit more post-production on the end result to make it even more temporally consistent. Because as I said before, temporal consistency is the hardest thing to achieve right now with AI animation. You're always struggling with the desire for the AI to create flickering, temporally inconsistent results, which our human eye is only so forgiving with. I think we all, as people who are watching, animated cartoons, they often play with this idea of flickering. It's called boiling in animation. You'll sometimes see animators and artists who put boiling into their style, where lines will like flicker and move around in a sort of dancing way.
So it's like basically the image is boiling.
It looks like the image is boiling, yeah, which is a nice style, and it gives animation a certain texture. But if it's too much, it's too much noise, and it makes your eye feel distracted, and it's quite hard for you to actually pay attention to the image if it's all boiling, So.
But this is the story of success. But what was the what was the failure? Did you have problems with integrating this AI tool into this pipeline?
I think initially we did have some experimentations, because as I said, the technique we landed on was the one I just described, where we were using.
Was it new technique? Did you see someone already using it in the music videos industry, or like in creating 3 minutes animation in the same way that you did?
So the way I just described with the input images, where I sort of pre-animated an entire video, we also, along with the pre-animated 3D, we also had a bunch of, we had my friend Josh shot some green screen material of the band in on location in London.
Okay, so that was like digital footage and analog footage from the musicians.
Yeah, so it was a form of collage in the end of the day. We had a collage of digital animations that were coming from the 3D render engine that I was using for making the 3D worlds, and then we had compositing layers of green screen material on top of that, and then we had some parts of the video were even using stock imagery to try and create basically like a kind of anchor point for the AI to latch onto, because the technique we were using would reimagine the image, but only to a certain extent. So it needed something to latch onto. So whether that was like the singer's face, or maybe like a fish that we had in there, or some landscape painting that we wanted to try and portray. That was all, coming across in the input images and then being processed through and coming out the other end. But the question you asked was about whether or not we had any failures, and we definitely did have failures along the way, because there were moments when we were testing out ways of moving in a 3D way through the AI images, and we were trying to use a tool that would essentially it would make a completely novel image. It would generate a completely novel image from a prompt. And that would usually look very, very strange. It would be kind of like not nearly as high resolution or coherent as today's AI. Like, it was nothing like DALL-E or modern day Stable Diffusion or Midjourney. It was like
for our listeners, this is like our new AI image generating tools that popped out like mushrooms massively in August 2022. And until now, they're one of the most leading in the industry. But they definitely create more crispy image with a higher resolution, and they have more control over it. But I guess with GAN is a bit less.
Yeah. So at this time, I think one of the major impacts that's happened, as you said, in recent times, with the rise of models like DALL-E and Midjourney and Stable Diffusion, is that they're trained on much larger data sets and also for much longer periods of time, and with teams of people tuning and fine tuning.
And also, it's really well funded.
Yeah,
of people.
These are like massive companies investing, billions of hours of CPU time to train these AI models to be as high quality as possible, and the results are astounding. But at the time when we were working on this video, we had the AIs would produce much smaller resolution images that were also,
and attention is only like 1 year before.
So a lot changed very quickly, and it's as I said at the beginning of the interview, it's hard to form a solid opinion about AI art because of that rapidly changing landscape that it is.
Individual imagery, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the experiments that we tried was a massive failure, basically, because the end result was just extremely trippy, extremely psychedelic, you would say.
That was not your intention, right?
We wanted to make something that was psychedelic, but my desire was really to try and make something that was like from an art, from a animation perspective, and from like an aesthetic, as someone who doesn't really, I don't really enjoy ultra trippy hallucinogenic video.
Yeah, it's not your visual language.
It's not really what. Yeah, I think maybe because I'm just a little bit snobbish and I find it to be too kind of cliche in some way. But I would rather have. I wanted the lyrics in the song, which were very specific lyrics, to really be represented in the visuals, and we weren't getting the results we wanted. So when we were typing in, like, you know, the prompt was something like. Cherry blossoms in Yoshino, Japan, which was one of the lyrics in the song. This would just come up with a really crazy, like, image with no consistency, no idea of composition, no idea of where's the sky, where's the ground, where are the cherry blossoms. They were just everywhere, and we're flying through this world of just like mashed up cherry blossom. nightmare, and it just felt like
so that was like a horror movie than dream catching song.
Exactly, and it was not desirable. And I think if we'd end up with that as a final result, we wouldn't have nearly as much of a response of success as we did have. So I feel like the process that we arrived on, it was kind of actually accidental, because at the end of the day, what happened was I was getting quite frustrated with the results. And I remember just sitting down for, I think it was like half an hour. I just got my computer out. I made this really basic 3D world, and I just sent the images to the AI artist I was working with, Max. And I said, like, can we just try running image to image on this? I know it looks really stupid, but let's just try it. And because it did look really stupid, it looked like a 5-year-old had made this like world. And not that 5-year-olds make terrible art, but like this was very basic. And yeah, the result came back and it looked really, really interesting suddenly. So that was the route we ended up pushing towards further. And I think that's really why the video feels consistent and feels temporally watchable and has meaning within it in some ways, because it was injected with meaning from the...
So would you like to say that, like, by investing your time and... having like more consistent time of work, like, yeah, the visual worked better in the end? Like, does time matter to create like better AI visual or not?
I think that I think with any work of art, I personally feel like artwork that you can, when you look at someone's artwork and you can tell how much time has been spent on it, it doesn't always equate to a good piece of work. But in my mind, as someone who does spend a lot of their time working on their artworks, I really appreciate and respect art that has a clear input of time inside the work. And even if it's an abstract piece, I somehow feel like abstract art can feel very like temporally invested. And yeah, I think that like it comes across in the work for sure. And I think that the process for us with this particular video was not like a fast process. I think in the end it was about a month or maybe just over a month of time spent doing research and development before we finally arrived on the final video. So yeah, I mean, it was a good solid chunk of time.
Yeah, for 3 minutes animation by working every day, attention over 10 hours, that's definitely a time-consuming project. Okay, thanks for sharing your thoughts on this video. Definitely, I will enclose the link into the description of the podcast so you guys can also check it out. And like many artists have now concerns about the dynamic change and their role in this machine learning techniques. And I have heard that argument that AI imagery is compared to stock imagery. And like a lot of artists think it's a very big ethical problem that all of the new emerging AI models were trained on artist data sets without their concern. So what do you think, what are the ethical and financial concerns artists have related to this emerging technology? And like, do you have any concerns?
I think that it's a really interesting time right now, because we're at the point in time where this is becoming a legal conversation, like this litigation charges against Stable Diffusion and Midjourney. And I think that's justified. I think artists deserve to know from a legal perspective where they stand, because that's going to shape the future of how people use these tools and how artists operate with alongside these tools. Because I don't think that art is going to go away. Like, art being created by humans, in my opinion, doesn't go away in the future. Like, I can't imagine a world where we suddenly just think, oh, we don't really need artists anymore because we've got these AI machines that create art. So that's like not going to happen. But I think that what could happen is that specific jobs within the art industry might become erased and replaced,
like,
with
AI. What kind of jobs do you mean?
Well, I mean, we've already seen like companies like Resident Advisor using their posters, AI generated posters for their you know, promotional work, which means that person who would have got paid a very meager, you know, one day probably 150 euros or something to create a poster will no longer get that work because they're now someone's using an AI to do that kind of work. And I think that's probably going to be true for lots of industries where there's already a clear division between AI, between like artists as arbiters of style and arbiters of like intention, and then art as like a tool for promotion or as a tool for just having some form of imagery to go along with your advertising. Like, advertising will probably jump at the opportunity to use AI art and replace real artists, whereas galleries, I don't think, are gonna jump at the opportunity to replace their roster of signed artists with machines, because there's so many different conversations and nuances and complexities within the world of art, but that we as humans definitely imbue value to things in a quite an arbitrary form. But I think that we all agree that art made by a person without the intervention of a machine, it's probably still more valuable at this point in time than art produced purely by someone typing in some words into a computer and pressing enter.
Which is also the question of the time and the tools and how it was created, right? Because definitely you need, for like creating the visual from the prompt, you need only like good GPU and computer, right? Like, what do you need?
At this point in time, you don't need it. You can do it through Google. Google Colab offers the ability to basically load these Stable Diffusion models and produce.
So Google Colab, what is Google Colab?
So we have currently on the landscape of AI making AI art generation, there's many different tools available. There's the most common three, I would say, are DALL-E, which is a creation by OpenAI, which you can use for free up to a certain extent to type in prompts and generate images. And they're also the creators of ChatGPT and GPT-3, their two most famous other models that they produced. And then we have...
So the company is called OpenAI, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then we have Midjourney, which is its own company, which uses a Discord front end, where you basically pay for a subscription to Discord.
Oh, you need to pay for this. Okay.
You do have to... I think you do to... I think
so you need to pay to create art.
I'm not... Well, that's... Yeah, I guess I'm not an expert on that exactly, but I think that there is maybe a free version as well, but I think to do anything substantial you need to pay.
But isn't the same thing with DALL-E, that you have like up to 20 free of charge images, like, or 10 images back every month?
Yeah, perhaps that's true. Yeah, but
there's,
I think,
like,
you can
limit, and then you also if you want to like keep doing that, you need to pay subscription.
Yeah, which maybe suggests the trend towards that, as like the future model will be one of encouraging people to pay for these services as a way of generating money from the, you know, these pre-trained models, which are trained
and
on
not
the
only pre-trained models, but also the developers and like people who worked in these models, right?
Yeah, it's definitely troubling. I mean, in the sense that people whose work has been used to train these data sets are essentially being exploited for free because they are not being recognized for the work that was used their work, which was used to make this possible.
Mm.
And that is definitely moralistically wrong, I think. And they should definitely be compensated if their work is being used. And I think there's a discussion towards that being the future of these systems, which is why it's so important to have this legal conversation now and make everyone aware of where they stand legally, and make sure everyone is just enlightened on exactly what AI art means for the future of AI of art creation.
And do you think who should create these conversations, or like who should create this initiative, like to be open about it and create awareness? Should you think it should come from the government or from the web development companies or from the artists themselves?
I think it seems to always fall on the shoulders of people who are academics to really consider these problematic conversations. It always ends up being that we end up too late down the line before people start having these kind of conversations. It was being raised by Hitoy Sterile was talking about it, about the potential problems of this back in like 2020 and 2019. And Joanna Zielinska also wrote a really good book about this subject as well around the same time. But they were not really taken seriously. It would be ideal if companies like OpenAI and Stability and Midjourney would have taken the responsibility on their own shoulders to have the conversation, but clearly they're not. So now they're being sued by individual artists in a litigation case, which will go to court and to the American, I think it's going to go to the American Supreme Court. I might be wrong about that, but it's going to be, you know, it took a litigation charge to get to this point. So it's not like people are having mature conversations about it, which is the classic kind of Silicon Valley way, it seems. It's like move fast and break things. It's like the kind of motto.
Move fast and break things. Well, that sounds very unhopeful. But do you keep using AI tool, and are you training your own models as well? Like, do you feel you work with AI ethically?
I think at this point, I'm not contributing any money towards any AI services. So in the sense that
you use open source AI?
Yeah, I use open source AI. I use Stability AI's Stable Diffusion, which is an open source pre-trained model, which is trained on a massive database called the Lian2B, I think it's called, the database. It's like an enormous database of basically every image on the internet, I'd imagine. So it's definitely not ethically trained.
Mm-hmm.
And I do use that to weight my own image, my own data sets within the framework of the Stable Diffusion model. So whether or not I could argue that my work is ethically good, I don't think I could really argue that case. But at this present point in time, when there's still a big conversation to be had and the tools themselves are readily available to be used, I don't see that it's a reason to like completely give up on the art form at this point in time. I think I'm not so skeptical of it that I think it's like directly exploitative to be using the tools right now. I do think that the way that the models were trained and the way that the data was scraped could be much improved, and I'm all for a better, more democratic way of distributing wealth of the proceeds that go from this art creation.
So if you were the person who would need to come up with a solution, what would be the solution? Like delete all of the existing software of these AI models on already like existing computers, and re-download them and recreate them ethically, or how the solution could be looking now?
I don't know if I have a solution that I could come up with. I'm definitely not like a legal or lawyer or someone who's that kind of involved in the process, but yeah. I would say that I can imagine it would be useful to enable people to go on to find out if their work is in the database and to opt in or out of their data being used.
How can you find out if your work is in the database? Are there any like open websites where you can track the databases? Because there's like gigabytes, yeah, millions of images.
I mean, there's always a possibility of doing like reverse image search in Google, which I imagine you could apply to this database if you wanted to put enough compute power into that functionality. I'm sure you could. I haven't heard of that being a possibility yet, and I'd imagine that most of these databases don't want to be inspected and probed in such a way at this point, because it would be very revealing. Most people don't want to reveal the data that's inside those that's been trained on. But yeah, I would say obviously you can't really download the entire thing. You would need like many hundreds of terabytes of storage space.
And good internet speed as well.
And of course, very good internet speed, which in Berlin we lack very much so.
Thanks to telecom.
Yes.
If you would, like, how would you react? Would it bother you personally to see that one of the data sets made out of your works, like steals out of your works? Or you would be like, I'm down to share my artworks for the sake of development of the AI technology.
Well, I think it's an interesting conversation, actually. And I personally, I've done some research into how these AIs actually function and the way that they use their trained data. And it's all based on, it's all kind of like, you have to imagine it like it's a massive, like latent space, as it's called, of information points, like vectors.
Latent space.
Yeah, like a latent space. It's like you have to imagine that every single image that's being used to train this AI is, all it's doing is it's inputting weights into a huge latent space of potential image vectors. So it's not like your image is directly being reinterpreted and then output again when someone types in, you know, your name. It's not like your work will come up in its exact form, because it's always going to be a weighted distribution towards a keyword that was sitting with your image. So the fact that my work is sitting there and it says, you know, by Felix Gina, whatever, and then has a picture I've made, and that has then been fed into an AI, and then when someone types in that phrase, you know, by Felix Gina, it might produce something that looks a little bit like my work. I don't really see that as like a big problem for myself personally. I don't feel threatened right now. At this point in time, I don't feel threatened, because mainly because I'm a video artist, and because I don't see myself as a particular, like, I haven't spent like decades crafting a very particular style. I'm not like someone whose work you would say, oh, that's Felix Keen. I don't think that about my work. I don't think of myself as someone who makes this very specific style of graphic design. I definitely don't do that. But if I was someone who made a very specific style of graphic design that was highly, highly complex and very desirable from a corporate perspective, I'd be very angry to know that people could. I'd be angry.
You
I think
would be proud that, like, no, finally, well, the whole world can change your aesthetic.
I don't know. It depends. I guess it does kind of depend on your emotional response towards your work being used in different ways. Like, I've definitely in the past I've felt upset when I've seen someone plagiarize something. Like, I remember once I made a playlist of music that I liked, and then I posted it online, and someone downloaded it and re-uploaded it as their own work on some random blog, and it was so random. It was like something happened in 2008, but I was so angry. I was like, I spent so long making this very specific playlist. It's very important to me, and someone's taken the exact.
Spotify.
Well, yeah, making playlists was a really big thing back then, and I was upset that they'd wholesale ripped it and then they reposted it as themselves, which was definitely way worse than I think than what Stable Diffusion does, in the sense that, like, it's not like there's no ambiguity within that situation. It's not like a version of, or a remix of, or a reinterpretation of. It's just a wholesale stealing of something. So yeah, it's an interesting landscape. I personally don't feel that precious about protecting my intellectual property within the realms of it, being it within a database of images alongside every other image ever uploaded to the internet. It feels to me like probably these tools bring more benefit to me as an artist to use them than to boycott and treat them as if they're a threat to my potential future as an artist. I find them obviously interesting. I've worked with them and I probably will continue to work with them, and I'll continue to follow the legal conversation around them, and it will continue to influence my continued practice as an artist.
Yeah, it's all very fast developing, isn't it? Okay, but we're going to the end of our conversation. I would like to ask a last question, and I want to talk about this opportunities and potential that you touched a bit, and the things we need to love and to be aware of AI. And we already heard what is the main awareness and red flag of this AI technology in the moving imagery, but also what are the boundaries and how AI can help us to expand our imagination. What do you think, Felix?
I think that we will probably see a lot more forays into AI generated images, and I think the future will probably be more towards video and
yes, that's what you
and 3D.
What you're not afraid yet could be a big
I'm excited actually. I'm excited to use it because I think that it's always going to be. I think what I can say from my personal experience of using these things is that it's always going to be how you imagine using the technology. Like, for example, I still have people writing to me asking me how I made that particular video, because clearly it's not completely obvious how it was made, because it's not obvious to everyone's brains that you would input images and have them output, as a video, as a moving image sequence. People do get stuck up, and that's the role of artists within the world of creation. I think personally, the role of as artists, from my perspective, is to
break the boundaries.
to be boundary breaking and to try out new things, to be experimental and to practice, like, just when
to
you
make
see
people ask question how it was made.
Yeah, I love the questioning of how it was made, and that's like the brain of someone who's probably more of an engineer minded person, is someone who wants to find out how something was done and then to try and do it a different way or recreate it or remix it, which is the fascinating thing and exciting thing about art. I find personally,
yeah, it's definitely a better question than what is the prompt. But
yeah, the prompt, if you want to know the prompt, then I'm not telling you.
Do you think there are similarities between techniques of AI image formation and the way that humans express themselves creatively?
I think that there's definitely interesting coincidences within the ways that a human mind thinks, like when you're dreaming or when you've taken a hallucinogenic drug, or even when you just spend a long time sitting and with your eyes closed meditating, images appear and they kind of feel like they are being generated from some noise, like pattern. I don't know, there's like a feeling of noise behind your eye somehow, or somewhere within your brain. And I think neurons within our brains are connected in some way to the way that machine learning models have neurons, of thousands of neurons connecting.
Yeah, that's how hundreds of thousands of neurons describe actually the AI neural networks.
Right. So I would say there is similarities, undeniable similarities. Mm. Whether or not they are purely, I don't think of our brains as digital. I don't think that we have digital ones and zeros going on to create.
Brains.
We're not binary. Yeah, we definitely more. There's an organic, perhaps quantum approach to our own way of thinking. I'm not a neuroscientist or an expert in the field, but I guess it's definitely fascinating in terms of the furthering that research into how our brains and how consciousness works and how our minds make art, because we still know so little about that subject. So any more insights will be very interesting to see in the future.
Okay, thanks. That was a great journey into AI moving imagery explanation. And good luck with the experimentation, and hope your video art only will be better with the AI development technologies.
Thank you, Natalia. It's lovely speaking to you. Thanks for having me on your show. I look forward to coming back.
And thanks again for listening to us, and hope you enjoyed it.